Hello, I'm Jamie Ho, and welcome to Ask the Finance Minister. Now, we've lived with this COVID-19 pandemic for more than a year now, and it's also been a year which we've seen the government roll out a series of quite unprecedented budgets. With us today to discuss the latest, and hopefully the only budget of 2021, is the PM and Finance Minister, Mr. Heng Swee Keat. Welcome.
Thanks, Jamie.
And as usual, we have four guests with us. But as a sign of the times, they're not with us here in the studio, but they're with us remotely. I have Peter Ho, who is a co-founder of a Singaporean SME that builds robots. Next to him is Bharati Manogaran. She is a veteran social service worker and now heads of Family Service Centre. We have Wahab Yusof. He's a senior executive with a global company. And K. Tanalakshmi, a senior trade unionist. Welcome to all of you. DPM, if I may start with the first question. You have used the title Emerging Stronger Together as the title of your budget. I can't believe it. It's been a year now since we last spoke about the unity budget. Right now, we're talking about emerging stronger together. If I may use the term together to get your sense of this budget, the importance of emerging together, both in terms of the breadth of policies that you put in place to ensure that everyone gets help, but in terms of the depth as well, to ensure that everyone who needs the most appropriate help and the most specific helps gets it immediately.
Yes. So, Jamie, the part on together is really an emphasis on the values that we have that have seen us through. Because if we look at the control of the pandemic, I think we've been able to bring it down quite well. There's still a lot of work to do, but we've been able to manage it quite well. And a lot of it is the full cooperation of our people, the sense of solidarity, the sense of unity. And this is critical in how we manage the pandemic. But beyond the pandemic, it is also how we bring our whole society together, how our companies are working together in order to manage this crisis. So this sense of solidarity is why I use the term stronger together. We are stronger when we work together. Now, what about emerging stronger? Now, COVID-19 is a major, major crisis throughout the world, comparable in scale to the Great Depression. Now, in order to come out of this crisis, we must recognise that a post-COVID world will be a different world. A lot of structural changes have been speeded up, and at the same time, COVID has thrown up new demands. For example, the demand for resilience. But I'm glad that we started our industry transformation 5 years ago. So we are ahead, and therefore we should make use of this time to emerge stronger.
Yeah,
it's like we are in a, you know, we are all having a hiking up this mountain, and now we have a very sudden major storm, and this major storm is affecting everyone who is trying to climb the mountain. But our team has been able to get into a shade in a relatively safely, and with that, we should use the time now to build up our capacity, build up our teamwork, build up our muscles, so that when the sun comes out again, we'll be able to run faster.
Yeah. I want to bring in Tana into the conversation now, because as a representative from the labour unions, she would have seen the people most affected by the last year of the COVID-19 pandemic. They would have experienced the benefits of some of the government policies that have been rolled out. Give us a sense of what you felt over the past year, especially also in reaction to the budget announcements most recently.
Yeah, I would say that the budget is a balanced budget, well-targeted, and I would even name it as a worker-centric budget because it has got a lot of welfare of workers in mind in ensuring that our workers, our Singaporean workers, continue to be in employment and their employment is sustaining in a good, well-paying jobs. So I would reckon that the support that's given to the employers will be pro-workers indeed.
Wahab, you also have a specific perspective to bring in terms of the workers who are going to be affected by this pandemic, and that comes from the gig economy. Can you elaborate a little bit and maybe pose a question to DPM Heng?
Yeah, to be specific, it's the home-based business that's really accelerated due to COVID. And then, of course, thereafter, the unemployment that's caused by COVID. So we're seeing at the micro business program level increase in take up of micro businesses. Mm. And so the home based business is deemed as a reliable source of income and quick income, especially for those unemployed. So my take is that there's still a lot of upside there. So the ask really is for the government not to, you know, be too invasive and allow a bit more laissez faire. Allow the home based business to thrive a bit with minimal intervention.
DPM, do you have a view on that?
Well, first, let me say that I'm very glad that now people have been very adaptable. When there's a need for change, they change. And similarly, our regulatory agencies have also been quite flexible in making some of this. And so we'll be happy to support these measures. At the same time, we'll have to look at what are the ways in which we can sustain this business. Because, for example, in home-based businesses, which are involved in the food business, it is important for us to maintain certain standards because it is about public health and safety. So those are the areas that we can look into as to how we can improve. But I'm very glad that our people are sort of adaptable and just making the change. And on Tana's point about the workers, I'm very glad that it has been very helpful to workers because, in fact, the key focus of our budget is really about workers. You know, we fully understand that if the breadwinner or the sole breadwinner in a family loses a job, it is not just he or she will be affected, but the entire family will be affected. So keeping the jobs for workers is very important. And therefore, the job support scheme at one stage was up to 75% of wages, helped to support the employment level. And at the same time, right now, for budget 2021, the focus is now on jobs growth incentive. So of the sums that was allocated, 5.2 is for jobs growth. The reason is that I mentioned that in the coming months and years, the economic environment will be different. Jobs will be changing. Trends have been accelerated. Digitalization is one good example. So the jobs will change in the coming months and years. So how to help our workers to move into jobs, moved into companies which are still hiring, is a major part of this budget. And that, coupled with all the training schemes, will help our workers to learn new skills to move into new jobs. And that is the major area that we have to work on. And I'm very happy that the union has been very, very active in your company training committee, in your job security council. Those are very major measures for us to help companies and help workers to move into a new normal.
I'm going to bring Peter into the conversation now and use the issue of the jobs growth incentive as well. Uh-huh. The government's policy proposals to create jobs for Singaporeans and make sure that Singaporeans are employed. Peter has a take now on whether or not Singaporeans are able to take up all these jobs that are available to them.
I think, DPM, it's a good effort to do it. But we are, as employers, we are very worried, you know, how long this pandemic is going to last and its effects on businesses. And if it's going to be a cliff at the end of it where the subsidies end, it's very hard for small companies to actually commit to it because I think we all want to emerge stronger. But, you know, we are very worried as how long this problem is going to last. Well, is there a possibility that, you know, it doesn't end so suddenly?
So I said that my hope is that I need to do only one budget. This is not that I'm worried about having to do more work, but really it means that if we need only one budget, the situation has stabilized. And therefore, you know, we can go out and continue our hike. But of course, if it continues to have a sudden downpour, then we are also ready to react should there be a need to. So the focus on this budget is really on emerging stronger. I have set aside $20 billion over the next 3 years to look at how we can accelerate our economic transformation. And as part of that transformation, the jobs growth incentive is precisely to help our companies to do that. So the jobs growth incentive incentivizes hiring, and it's up to, the period is open to September. So over the next few months, I hope that we'll continue to hire. And this hiring is really for companies which are sort of in two minds and they're marginal. and they think, well, should I expand, should I not expand? But if there is a good growth, you'll be a pity if this time is lost in not taking on the new worker. And at the same time, if the worker, when he or she is hired, is able to fit into the company over these next few months, very soon they'll be able to do productive work, add to the company's revenue. And in that way, he or she will be compensated and the company will also be justified in hiring. And we are using this time to really accelerate that hiring so that companies which have confidence that we can continue growing, can hire, and that their growth is not impeded during this next few months. Now, as to whether more needs to be done later, it really depends on the overall situation. But our central scenario is that I think if globally with this vaccination going on, although there's still a huge uncertainty, our central scenario is still that we are likely to see good recovery in 2021. And I hope that companies will make full use of this to accelerate.
DPM, thank you very much. We've just run out of time for this segment, but when we come back, we'll talk about how households and the most vulnerable Singaporeans are getting help. Welcome back to Ask the Finance Minister. In this segment, I'm going to talk about households and I'm going to talk about the most vulnerable Singaporeans who have been affected by this pandemic. And to do this, I'm going to speak to Bharathi. Bharathi, you've been at the forefront of helping families through this. Do you have a question for the Finance Minister?
Yes, certainly, Jamie. So the overall median household income for the Singapore family fell for the first time last year since the global financial crisis. And the Department of Statistics also released a report last year that the bottom 10% of the Singapore households saw a 6% decrease in their real income. On the social service front, between the period of June to November last year, we saw a 25% increase in the number of persons who came to apply for the ComCare financial assistance. So it was real, as what DPM had mentioned in his budget speech, that this pandemic specifically was highlighting the cracks in many societies and the inequalities as such. So the really the question is about how could we mitigate the impact on such households that I've mentioned earlier, such that the income inequality in Singapore does not become wider, as well as given that the trajectory of the pandemic is rather uncertain at the moment, could there be a possibility of the financial assistance being extended?
Yes. Well, Bharati, those are very important questions. And in fact, for last year's budget and also in this year's budget, our support has been tilted towards our low-income group. So there is broad-based support for everybody because it's such a major crisis, but a lot of the support is tilted towards the lower-income group. So if you look at, for example, the support last year, on average, every household member gets $2,000 of support, but those in the lower 40% of our household gets between $2,500 to $2,800 per member of support. So it is a very significant source of support for our households. And there are schemes like, for example, the CDC voucher, which not only supports the low-income households, but also supports our hawkers, our heartland shops. So those are measures which have been designed to be helpful to our lower-income group. And in this, besides that, there are also the temporary relief scheme, the COVID support grant, and various other measures which have been targeted for to support practically everybody, but with more for those with fewer resources. Now, the other area, of course, we are very concerned is always on education, making sure that our kids are able to continue their education. So I'm very glad that our schools remain open, our children continue to go to school at all levels. So those are very important ways in which we are supporting everybody. You mentioned about how the inequality has risen. And in fact, the inequality after all the government transfers have actually improved. Our Gini coefficient was 0.375 last year compared to 0.398 the year before. So it is an improvement. And in fact, at 0.375, it is the best performance since we tracked this data, I think, from the year 2000. So it has been a very significant support. So this year will continue. This year's budget continues with that kind of support. But at the same time, I am also hoping that many more people will come on board and provide the support. So, for instance, in this year's budget, I provided the for the ComChest, the Share as One scheme, for which we'll provide dollar-for-dollar matching, and also the giving grant. So in that, when we go to a restaurant and if the restaurant can round up the bill, you know, those amounts will go towards ComChest as well. So those are good initiatives that ComChest have proposed to us, and we decided that this is a meaningful thing to do. But at the same time, I want to take this opportunity to thank many Bharati and many of your colleagues in the Social Services Agency. I think during this period, you all have played a very important role in providing that level of support to make sure that at the front line, we can take care of everyone.
Yeah, I'm going to bring Wahab into the conversation now because he has an interesting take on this in sort of enabling Singaporeans who maybe don't need as much help to help others. Wahab.
Yeah. So DPM, I think continuing the thinking around the lower income, I think not everybody needs help. So the GST vouchers given out, various vouchers given out, means more to the lower income than those who are a bit more fortunate. So is there a way or mechanism that people can actually opt out and so that the government can rechannel some of these vouchers and giveaways or handouts to the lower income. I mention this because it is a bit more frictionless if the government does it versus dependence on, say, charity organisation.
Yes. So when that's a very good idea, Wahab. In fact, we have been encouraging that. So in the various payments that we give out, for instance, the solidarity payment and so on, we have in a letter a note to say that if you do not need this and would like to donate this, you know, this is the QR code, you just sign on. And it is a very simple, straightforward process. And as I mentioned, the charities did have an increase for COVID-related causes and for the funds like the Courage Fund, Invictus Fund. But on the other hand, the regular giving has fallen somewhat because I think... So we are hoping that we can encourage more regular giving where either in the share is one program where when individuals deduct a few dollars from their salary every month, so every month you contribute something and over a year it will be significant. Or say if you are using your credit card to pay for something regularly and you say, well, I don't mind paying $2, $5 more for each bill, that is also helpful. So I'm hoping that Singaporeans will support all these very good causes and make the donation.
Bring in Tana now into the conversation. Tana, you obviously are at the forefront of helping workers through this pandemic, but we all know that workers as well have quite strong and heavy family responsibilities. In talking to these workers, do you get a sense of the troubles that they may have juggling these responsibilities? And are there maybe other areas of help that you think they need?
Yeah, thank you, Jamie. I think there's two important points that I want to make. First is the caregiving support. The second is mental stress that our workers are inflicted with. In terms of caregiving support, I think the DPM, I hope more can be done in this area because it is important that we have better access and greater infrastructure as well as employer support at workplace for our workers who have to juggle between work demands as well as family demands. And I've personally seen many workers are struggling with that. Flexible work arrangement is one way, which we are promoting as tripartite partners, including NTUC. We are encouraging our employers to do so, to implement it in a very structured manner. Having said that, I think we need to have more access to this and greater support in this area. The second point is about mental wellness. I think unions have been advocating this at the workplace to ensure that our workers have greater access to counsellors, professional counsellors, if they are inflicted with this stress at work. You can see that during COVID period, I think there's a lot of studies that have been done. More than 50% of the workers who are work from home, they are struggling with this emotional side of things where they are psychologically affected. And at the same time, you also do see that there's no end to work. They don't know when to stop work. And these are added stress for people who are working from home. I think as government and also tripartite partners, where union is really pushing for more progressive work environment, I think we can do better in this area.
Okay, thanks, Bharati.
Probably I would like to hear DPM's view.
Sorry.
Yeah.
DPM put you to work now.
Well, thanks, Anna. Very good point. I think first on the how do we support our workers, in particular when workers are faced with multiple challenges. I would say that the idea of flexi work is a very good one. And I think COVID has shown us that in many cases, you don't have to just work 9 to 5 unless you're in a factory setting where you need the machines. So I think there are many jobs for which we can exercise greater flexibility. And I hope that the union will work together with the employers, with SNEF, to see how we can better promote this. It can be, the studies elsewhere have also shown that it can be actually more productive. But at the same time, it can also be more stressful. If you have to work from home and then you're having to look after the kids and you don't have enough space, it can be very stressful too. So it is a new challenge that we should look at. What are some of the possible solutions for us to manage that? Your other point on mental wellness is a very important one. And we now have work groups working on these issues of mental wellness among workers, mental wellness even among students. And I hope that employers can play a more proactive role to ensure the mental well-being of our workers. And at the same time, we can all come together to look at how we can form these alliances for action. The Alliances for Action came out of these emerging stronger conversations that I started with as part of Singapore Together, to look at how, as we are battling COVID, we should think about what happens after this and how do we come out of it stronger. So emerging stronger in the economy, emerging stronger socially as well. So the conversation has been helpful, and like-minded people can come together and say, well, what can we do? What can we do together to tackle this problem? What are the changes that we can make?
DPM, thank you very much. We've run out of time for this segment, but when we come back, we'll talk about how Singapore is going even greener. Welcome back. In this segment, I'm going to talk about how Singapore is going even greener and even more sustainable. And to do that, I'm going to bring in Peter Ho. Peter, tell us a little bit about your driving habits, your preferences, and what you hope to do in coming years.
I'm a self-proclaimed car foul, right? I love my cars, and the move towards electric vehicles is very good. But the question to DPM really is the reduction of the ARF floor starting only in January next year. Is it possible that we brought it to be immediate so that, you know, our transition towards electric vehicles could begin now? We won't have a cliff and, you know, it will force the infrastructure to catch up with the growing demands.
Yes. Well, Peter, that's a good question. There is an implementation plan for this EV because first we have to start with our charging infrastructure, the 60,000 that we're going to expand, and as well as all the details about the adjustments on the various ARF and tax matters, for which the Minister for Transport will say more at the COS. But I'm glad that there is interest in moving towards EV because we really have to find better ways of moving around. And there are a number of things that we need to do. One, fundamentally, is to really go car light. And one of the most carbon efficient way of moving from place to place is actually public transport. And we are dedicating $60 billion to build up our MRT support. And every MRT station is within 10 minutes walk of our residents for over 80% of our population. So that will be a very significant change. At the same time, we got to look for better alternatives in the way that we consume. So this 3R movement to reduce, reuse and recycle is another important part of our plan. And of course, going towards this 30 by 30 to encourage our resilience. And the reason why we're taking all these moves is that the climate change is real. Singapore's global emission, share of global emission is only 0.11%. But at the same time, as a low-lying island, it is climate change can wipe out the Singapore island if sea level rises. It is a very long-term challenge. You know, it may not happen next year or the year after it, but we have to prepare. And in fact, we are preparing $100 billion to build seawalls and other coastal defences. So it's one of those challenges that we will have to continue to find ways to do that. But at the same time, I think there's also opportunity for green growth. So out of COVID, if we can have a green recovery, that will be very good for our economy, very good for our workers and businesses. And some of this effort will be towards, whether it's about reducing waste, whether it's about recycling, whether it is about issuing of the green bond and a green finance action plan that MAS will have. So I think in the coming years, the many businesses will be looking at how they can make use of less resources and more carbon-efficient resources.
Yeah, I want to jump off on that point on the green recovery and maybe bring Tana into the conversation. Because I would imagine that the green economy and the green recovery are going to provide immense opportunities as well. Climate change is not just a challenge. It presents opportunities for jobs. Tana, in talking to workers in your day-to-day work, do you get a sense of excitement that they know that there are opportunities out there, that there are jobs out there in this new economy?
Yes. In fact, workers do welcome new economy or new opportunities in new industry sectors. But the important thing is to train them in the respective industry skill. For instance, if you are growing the green sector, how prepared are our workers to take on jobs in this sector? And how can we expedite the training process to acquire these skills and competency as well as knowledge? So we need more support in this area to better prepare our workers. And there could be instances where we need to bring in foreign talent in these new sectors. Yeah, we do have to bring in new talents to make sure that this talent transfer is done in a smooth and a transitional way, whereby our workers will benefit from it. So these are things that we need to prepare our workers. Mindset shift is also equally important.
Yeah, thanks, Tana.
So probably the government can better support in this training area.
Yeah. Yes. DPM?
Well, Tana, those are very good comments and I would fully support workers in taking on these green jobs which will be created in the coming years. And there, I think the training in our ITE polytechnics and universities will be very important. But at the same time, I'll be very happy to support under the jobs and skills roadmap, new areas for which we will need to learn these skills. And in fact, it's a very wide range of skills and also a very important growing area. And apart from training, one very important area is on R&D. So under our RE2025 plans, we are dedicating quite a lot of resources on to build up our understanding of urban solutions and sustainability. And in those areas, we have to look at what are the green shoots, you know, the sources of green growth. And there are many of this because I have been following some of this R&D work that is done all over the world. And some of our companies are really doing very well, whether it is in about new sources of power, whether it is about carbon sequestration, or even in the way that we consume, how do we reduce waste and so on. So it is a very promising area. And if Singapore can do it, I think the solutions that we can find will also be valuable to many cities around the world. And in that way, it can keep our businesses and our workers competitive.
I want to talk a little bit now about a different area of sustainability. Uh-huh. And that's where the government is trying to go, as you say, 30 by 30, yeah, sourcing our own food. Bharati has a question, and I want to bring her into the conversation, yeah, about what the implications are as Singapore sources and develops more and more of its own food sources. What does this mean? And do you have concerns there, Bharati?
Well, I guess the question really is, you know, I think it's a great move to go along the line of local produce. Again, you know, as a social service professional, the question in my head would be, how are we going to ensure that local produce are going to be reasonably priced such that it's going to be accessible for every Singaporean and not just, you know, like what you see in your supermarket, the organic section, which not everyone can afford to buy. La. Yep.
Yeah. Well, Bharati, so the... one of the things that we can... Your concern is definitely very important. And even as we go green, I think there will be a range of options. We must continue to expand our options. And even as we do the 30 by 30 goal, it does not mean that Singapore will cut off our sources of supplies. Because I think we do... What has kept Singapore going all these years is that we have a very open trade policy. We buy from anywhere, everywhere, as long as it meets our needs and that it is at the price that is... competitive, they're suitable for our people. But at the same time, even the for the food part of it, growing our own, I've seen, for example, families also growing their own vegetable. It's also a very good way to bring people into community gardens where neighbours can come together, even at the empty spaces between HDB flats to grow vegetables and share these vegetables. Now, of course, those do not fully meet our needs, but for the purposes of social bonding, for the purpose of building a greater sense of neighbourliness, those are very useful measures. So we will certainly take into account the needs of all our families, especially our low-income family, to make sure that they are not disadvantaged in this process.
DPM, we have to go for a short break now. But when we come back, we'll talk about how Singapore is going to deal with deficits in the long term. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Ask the Finance Minister. DPM Heng, as we close off in this final segment, I want to talk to you a little bit about the issue that Singaporeans don't really hear about that much, budget deficits.
Right.
We're used to hearing about budget surpluses, but as you mentioned in the budget, we've incurred historic budget deficits. As you look towards the rest of this term of government, what is in your mind as you try to balance this off in terms of your spending, in terms of revenues? What's on the top of your mind?
Well, it is actually a very, very stressful time. Because first, we are in a very, very severe recession, not just in Singapore, but around the whole world. And the trajectory of the recovery depends very much on the trajectory of the pandemic. So there is a big cone of uncertainty. But still, I think with vaccination and with the progress that we are making, I think there is hope that we'll be able to recover. Certainly, hopefully in 2021, and then but beyond that. But even then, it will take time for us to fully recover. That said, what we are hoping over the next 4 to 5 years is that we will still be able to balance our budget during this term of government. If the recovery is as we expected, then I think we have a good chance of balancing our budget. I would like to return to a balanced budget because not only have we drawn on past reserves on 2 consecutive years, but there's also been a huge draw on the past reserves. So we do have to really think hard about how we maintain our reserves. Because the total amount of reserves that we have drawn on is very big, and I have a total of 53.7 billion. Even this year, I had to ask the president for the use of past reserves of 11 billion. Fortunately, the 52 that I asked for last year, we didn't have to spend every cent of it, so we had some leftovers. So altogether, you'll still be a net increase in our use of past reserves. But I'm hoping that as businesses resume, as income resume, we can get back to a balanced budget.
One of the main sort of tools that you have in getting to the balanced budget is obviously the GST, mm-hmm. which you have said will happen sooner rather than later, raising it from 7 to 9.
Yes.
Bharati and I were having conversations off air, and she's obviously heard from families and their concerns on that. Bharati, why don't you ask the DPM your question?
Thanks, Jamie. So DPM, yes, we know that once the coffers are touched, it must be recouped, as difficult as that decision must be. So we have heard of the impending GST hike, a sooner rather than a later scenario. We also know that petrol prices are going to be increasing, and this will definitely have a toll on the working drivers in Singapore. There is the driver relief fund that runs from January to June this month. But I think the reality is that a lot of people are expecting the effects to be rather long-lasting and for the economy to recover slowly but surely. The question I have in mind is, would you have any measures that you have thought of to sort of cushion the knock-on effects of the GST hike and other price hikes that might come, especially during, as we are going through such unprecedented crisis?
Well, Bharati, that's a very important question. And in fact, first and foremost, I think our most important way of managing any of this price hike is always to make sure that our workers have a job and that we continue to grow our economy, transform our industry so that we can continue to have wage increases. So I mentioned earlier on that when you measure inequality last year, it is at a historic low. So that came out of massive transfers because our schemes were tilted towards supporting our lower income group. So that's the first thing. Second, in terms of the GST hike, let me say that I said the GST will increase between 2022 and 2025. But I have already set aside $6 billion in the assurance package to provide support. So that would be another very significant support for households. So for our lower 20% of a household, it is equivalent to not paying GST for 10 years, not paying the increased GST for 10 years. And for the average, is 5 years. Why have we been able to do that? Because 60% of our GST collection today is from the foreigners who visit Singapore or are working in Singapore, and the top 20% of households when they consume in Singapore. So it is GST is often seen as a regressive tax. But in fact, if we look at the overall balance of what people pay and what people get, we have turned it into a very progressive system. So to just illustrate with a number, for the top 20% of our households, they pay 56% of the taxes, but they get back 11% of the benefits. For the lowest 20%, they pay 9% of the taxes, but get 27% of the benefits. So you can see how it is tilted, that the better off pay a lot more taxes and get less benefit. Those who are less well off pay a lot less in the form of taxes, but get a lot of the benefits. And in fact, many of our workers do not even pay personal income tax. So our system has been designed over the years to tilt our support, provide greater support for those with greater needs. And we'll continue to observe this principle. Even when we did these various budget measures, as we designed this, we designed the schemes with this in mind, to mitigate inequality, to provide greater support for those with greater needs. So I'd like to assure everyone that we're very aware of this. Now, as for the question on petrol prices, well, the support has been given such that for those who are relying on driving for a living, it is equivalent to not having to pay the rise in petrol duty for a year. And for the rest, it is equivalent to about two-thirds.
As we start to close off our conversation, I wanted to turn our conversation a bit more long-term and look into the future and get a chance for all four of our guests to pose questions, looking forward and also providing maybe a wish list for the DPM. So maybe I'll start with Wahab and then Bharati. As you look to the future, what do you think this government needs to focus on? Maybe the questions from each of you, and then the DPM will answer the questions. Wahab, you first.
Yeah, so firstly, I think I was quite happy to hear about the innovation part of the budget and the fact that we are reaching out to neighbouring countries for investment and collaboration. So if there's anything I'd like to wish from this initial budget is to kind of continue this, because there's still a lot of upside for us to collaborate with the different countries and kind of future-proof our economy. That's one. But of course, with that, raise the concern on the digital divide within Singapore itself. Because as we go full on digital, there's a tendency for the lower income to fall behind. And there's still questions about accessibility, usability, and so on and so forth. So a question to government is that, can we be a bit more forcible to prop up the lower income, right? To get them to catch up in the digital domain.
Mm. Bharati?
Yep, so Wahab has said it right off my mouth. So that would be my first request, really, because I think COVID really highlighted very starkly for us about the need to suddenly embrace the digital world. And as we were trying to reach out to our vulnerable clients, we found that a lot of them were sometimes left behind in this. So I guess it was really about the need for us, every single Singaporean, to be IT literate and to have that savviness. And it would be great if we could reach out to older as well as low-income households in this aspect. And my second request is really to echo what Tana said earlier, because we did find that COVID has not just been a physical health crisis, but also a mental health crisis for many countries as we started feeling the social and psychological impact of it. So my request would be really, you know, as we are setting aside funds for physical health structure, could we do the same for the mental wellness of all Singaporeans? Because we did see these concerns cutting through all SES in Singapore. Mm.
DPM, quick answer to them.
Well, I think first, I fully agree with what both of you have just said. And I think on the digital divide, it is very important for us to bridge this divide. To bridge this divide in terms of age as well as in terms of income. So for instance, we have the SME, for the smaller company, the SME Go Digital. For the seniors, we have a Seniors Go Digital. I myself have gone to many of these sessions looking at how our seniors are learning how to use the new digital tools. And I'm very, very heartened by their spirit of learning and how In fact, many companies are also coming forward to help in this effort. And one of the things which I've learned is that even for many of the very experienced programmers, they have found it found great value in helping the seniors to do that, because they said, we learn as much as we are giving, because we didn't realize that what was 10 steps for us is so easy, but yet a 3-step may be very difficult for a senior. And suddenly we realize the value of the 1-step. And so they are looking at how they can do their programming better. So I hope that we can bridge this digital divide. But at the same time, I'm also hoping that as part of our Alliances for Action, many groups can come forward and say, how about us coming together? We all know how to use the mobile phone. How about us volunteering in a community centre, in these digital clinics, to help our seniors with this? So everyone can play our part. One of my schemes that to encourage this corporate volunteerism is a business and IPC scheme where businesses can partner with IPCs to offer their expertise to the IPCs and in turn to their clients. So those will be the way that we can do it, because it takes everyone to put in the effort. So that's on the digital divide. But on the Wahab's point about you're very happy with innovation, I'm very glad, because I think growing our economy to be much more technology and innovation driven, it will be a very important part for to keep the economy competitive and to create good jobs for our people.
Dana and Peter, it's your turn now, but can I just ask you to be as succinct as you can for your questions? Dana, you first, and then Peter.
Your wish list.
Every worker matters, and hope to see that progressive wage model being expedited in many industries like what our labour movement is pushing for. The second point I want to make is that being an inclusive labour movement, recently DPM did announce about salary increase for healthcare workers. Hopefully, you know, the government could also consider extending it to outsourced workers who are equally supporting the front line in overcoming this pandemic.
Thanks, Dana.
Something for DPM to consider. Thank you.
Peter.
The aging population and what COVID has shown us as a whole, healthcare, I think, is wealth, right? And just as a wish list, DPM, to reinforce this and supercharge it even faster and bigger than ever before, because that's what keeps us alive, literally.
Thank you.
Yes,
DPM,
thank you.
Short answer.
Thank you. So, Peter, on the healthcare, indeed, we are providing a greater allocation to the Ministry of Health. And I must say that our healthcare workers, our frontline workers, have done a sterling job. And if you look at the budgetary allocations, the Ministry of Health now gets the highest allocation of all ministries. And in fact, it will continue to grow because our healthcare needs will rise. Then on Tana's point about how do we have more inclusive growth, the progressive wage model, and what? Well, this will be discussed in detail at the Committee of Supply, and I am fully in support of our progressive wage model, because I think it is a very meaningful model, a model that has worked well, that it is a sustainable model as well. So at the same time, we can get everyone, companies, workers, the unions, the National Employers Federation, to all work together so that we can make the change. So going back to my point about, you know, we are stronger together. If we put together our minds, you know, and our wits and our heart and hands, I think we can make the big difference.
DPM, I have the prerogative of the last question, so I will use it. We don't have that much time, so let me just ask you a very short and sharp question.
Yes.
You've alluded to hard choices that Singapore faces in the coming years. If you look 5, 10, 20 years ahead, what do you think are some of the hardest choices that Singapore has to face and that Singaporeans need to be prepared for?
Well, I think over the next 5, 10, 15 years, the pace of change will just get faster. And at the same time, we need to prepare for the unexpected. Now, we went through Asian financial crisis, we went through the dot-com bubble, we went through SARS, we went through the global financial crisis. And now you have this COVID crisis, which is another huge challenge. So I think one of the things that we must be prepared for as individuals and as a country is that we must always be prepared for change And we must always be prepared for surprises. Because if we can anticipate what big crisis will come, we would be able to prevent it. But so far, I think the humans have not had the ability to be able to predict the future with such accuracy. So we must get ready for the future. And if we get ready to think about, A, how do we manage unexpected events and prepare ourselves with the buffers, with the risk management mindset, whether as workers, as individuals, as businesses, I think we will always be able to tackle unexpected events well. But at the same time, the future is also full of promises, full of opportunities. What we must do is to come together, put our minds together, our hearts together, our hands together, and say, well, how do we work together to seize these opportunities? And there'll be many, many new opportunities that will come out of this COVID pandemic. And I think Singapore is in a very good position to do that because I think we have remained united, we have remained resilient, and that by staying in solidarity, I think we can face any future with great fortitude.
DPM, thank you so much for spending time with us. To our guests, thank you as well. To you at home, thank you for staying on.